man's world. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Poor 40 Guitar Podcast. I am your host, Jarrell Powell. Thank you so much for tuning up. You can catch the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anchor.fm/440. You can follow the podcast as well on Instagram at the 440 Guitar Podcast to get updates on the episodes coming out. And if you have any questions or if you have an artist that you think would be great to have on the show for me to speak to, feel free to let me know. You can send me a direct message on Instagram, or you can also go to the440podcast@gmail.com to send me a direct email. So feel free to do that if you'd like to do so. Today, I'm very excited to speak with this artist today. He is a multi-instrumentalist, producer, engineer, and wandering storyteller born in Milwaukee. And also his latest full-length album, The Great Big Motel Bed in the Sky. He explores loss and love while being accompanied by his band, The Derechos. And really excited to speak with this artist today. The 440 Guitar Podcast is excited to have Nathan Kalish on the show. How you doing, man?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. Starting to get into the mode of the summertime weather, starting to get hotter and hotter each day as days go by.
Yeah. Where are you? I'm in Nashville.
Oh, okay. I'm out in Long Beach, California.
Oh, okay. I'll be out there in like 2 weeks. So.
Oh, nice.
3 weeks. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Very cool. Very cool. How's everything been on your end before we get started?
Things are real busy, starting to pick up again. After 2 years of nothingness.
Right. I mean, if anything, that's heaven in hush puppies, right? Given that, you know, people have been starving to play live and to tour and get everything out. It's funny because it's been harder to get guests on the show, but I find that to be almost in a positive light at the same time, where it's like, you know, a lot of the people I've spoken to, because they were on podcasts because it's like that's all they could do at that time. So I'm glad people are working again.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's good to be. I'm glad to be working.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So on the 440 Guitar Podcast, really big on origin stories, how people got to where they are today, and I tend to ask my guests for my interviews on the show, your earliest memory of music. Tell me about your earliest memories you can think of as far as music goes.
I remember my mom would always listen to the Carpenters and the Beach Boys growing up, and my dad would listen to a lot of classical music.
Wow.
And that's kind of the first music I was really exposed to.
Hmm.
Probably about 3 or 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were your parents musicians at all?
No, not really. Hmm. My dad sang, and my mom, I think she played piano when she was a kid.
Hmm.
But no, they didn't teach us music or anything. My sister, she was a little bit older than me. She was a pretty advanced piano player for her age.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But she kind of quit at some point. Hmm. But they all thought she was going to be like a famous pianist.
Yeah. Just didn't work out. It wasn't in the cards, I guess.
She does real estate now. So.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, she's making money. So
that's a true story. Yep.
Yeah. What were they trying to kind of pass down that instrument to you as far as you learning piano when you were younger?
Yeah, you know, they gave me a couple shots at it. Then I took a college class once as well, literally once. I went to one class and didn't work out, so took the, yeah. But I just never really was very good at learning music formally. I'm kind of a slow learner. And slow reader as well, so reading music never really worked that well for me.
Yeah,
always had to kind of maybe work a little bit harder, I think, than most people at it.
Was there a certain music that connected with you that, you know, made you want to progress into, you know, learning instruments? Was there, besides what you learned in house?
Well, yeah, I mean, I started just kind of getting into punk rock music. A lot of the California stuff that was happening in the late 80s, early 90s, like Operation Ivy and just like the kind of hardcore punk stuff, and then metal and stuff like that. I was pretty young, and and all those kids would hang out with me. You know, it was hard to find people to hang out with, so the guys on the skateboards wanted to hang out, and that was the kind of stuff they listened to. So
yeah, definitely.
Got into that.
What was there a specific band or artist that, you know, you kind of held a little higher than others in that time?
No, I couldn't even really name any of the artists. Oh, you know, the bass player from Rancid, his name was Matt Freeman. Mm. He's got an amazing bass solo on the tune Maxwell Murder. You probably are hip to a lot of stuff being from California, right?
A little bit. I dabble. Yeah, I dabble.
Because, I mean, that's where all that was going on. Mm. But, yeah, he had this really amazing bass solo, and I was a bass player first. So I followed that quite. That was, like, the first thing I did in a band was play bass.
Oh, nice. Nice. Was it one of those situations where, you know, a group of kids started to play music and they're like, point to you to play bass, or how did that?
I mean, bass is always the instrument that, like, the kid with that doesn't have, like, the, you know, the guitar player is always, like, the one that's the most talented. They're like, the singer is always the one that has, like, the most cojones. And then the drummer is like the athlete, you know? Yeah. And the bass is like the quiet dude that doesn't really like know what he's doing with himself.
Oh man, it's still crazy to me how, like, in, I would say from the outside looking in, that bass kind of gets a bad rap. But then people that are like in the industry and they know, like, legitimate, you know, just like those artists, they're like, oh yeah, this guy's a monster, you know what I mean? Like, there's a reason why he works with everybody. Yeah. You know,
well, so it's the thing I think with bass, it gets overlooked a lot because, you know, a lot of people advance to other instruments. If you have a lot of talent and you're on bass, not a lot of them stay on bass. But if you find a bass player that decided to kind of stick with bass as their main instrument, a lot of times they've learned other instruments too, and bass is just their main instrument. And they're usually amazingly talented bass players. You know, it's easy for anybody to play bass. It's a great starting instrument, but it's really difficult to be good at bass.
Right.
That's being good at bass is, you know, just like any instrument, it's, you can take it to any level or any, you know, any platitudes of any other instrument, really.
Yeah.
I did not do that. I am a very average bass player.
So after you learned bass, did you transition to guitar afterwards?
No, then it was drums.
Okay.
Yeah. Then I spent a lot of time on drums growing up. I was kind of a drummer, like, considered a drummer until I was maybe like 21 or 22 when I started writing songs. But I mean, I still get a lot of drum gigs, starting to get more. But that was when I started touring. I started as a drummer when I was 27, started drumming full time in a touring band.
Wow. Wow. When you first transitioned to that instrument, I mean, that's definitely a leap of sorts. I mean, did it connect with you pretty well, or was it just one of those grand scheme things as far as, like, you know, you got better as it went on, or what was the reason to connect to drums after bass?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's natural to be, if you can play one of them, it's natural to learn the other one. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, they're both so similar as far as being the rhythm section goes.
Yeah.
So if you have an understanding of one, then it helps your understanding of the other one as well. And knowing how to play both of them, I think, makes you a better drummer or a better bass player. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. A lot of bass players I know also dabble in drums and vice versa.
Did you find it, was it pretty easy for you, like, as far as, like, during that learning process?
Yeah, both of those instruments are really primal. Mm. They don't take, like, you can kind of get by with some feeling and listening, and you don't get as held up by the technicalities of chords and, you know, I mean, obviously scales are involved in bass, but you don't get as bogged down by having to learn all that stuff. Like with guitar is a very complicated instrument. You know, I'd say it's more complicated than piano. You know, it's very difficult, and it takes a lot of work to get good at it. And that's why a lot of people that play guitar, I think they've spent their entire life getting good at it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So when did you start singing, you know, in bands and stuff like that? How was that transition?
Well, I always tried to, but I was never any good at it. I was always a really horrible singer. And then at some point I started to kind of find my voice, maybe when I started writing my own songs, it was easier to find my voice when I was singing things that were in my head, as opposed to trying to sing other people's songs. Because I didn't have like a voice that could hold long notes or do vibrato or even really, you know, breathe very well. But I mean, I could find notes, you know, I had good enough pitch, but I didn't have very good tone. So I didn't have very good breathing or, you know, much of like, you know, what you would consider like a, I call them natural voices, you know, like when you see these kids that can just sing and they sound like a diva or whatever right off the bat. And it's like, wow, that's, they have a very natural voice. And then there's people that have voices that I, you know, they learn how to use their voice really well. And those are the people I looked to, people that didn't have great voices by, you know, the worldly standards, and they learned how to use their voice very well and learned how to record it and learned how to, you know, produce it, and put the right instruments around it and how to EQ a voice or how to put the right effects on it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's something that's a life's work right there. I mean, you can spend the rest of your life thinking about that stuff, but I definitely, you know, I heard like Randy Newman, you know, who was a great singer, great piano player. He was talking about one time he was doing an event with Tom Petty, and they had to learn a cover or something. And it was some kind of tribute. And Tom Petty went up to sing the song, and he was horrible. and then everybody kind of looked around, and then he did the song like two or three more times, and he learned how to sing it the way Tom Petty would have sung it, and it sounded great. And I just thought that was like an interesting observation, you know, because somebody like Randy Newman, you know, who probably was amazing at everything, you know, his whole, for most of his life, virtuosic in a lot of, you know, respects.
Yeah.
And then somebody like, you know, Tom Petty, who probably, you know, he doesn't seem like the kind of person that was probably very like, it probably wasn't as natural for him to be a singer, you know, and then he figured out how to make it work for himself.
Yeah. I always loved his writing, you know. It's funny when you have those musicians where you're like, God, I forgot he made this song too. I love this song, you know what I mean? So Tom Petty's definitely one of those people for me. As far as you writing your own songs, and I think it's interesting. I feel like your music journey, you think through it very logically. You know, versus like I've seen, you know, just different patterns of like other, you know, folks where it's kind of like a scatterbrain notion, or just like, you know, as far as you like starting on bass and going to drums, just from like, okay, well, there's a rhythmic concept that I'm connected to, I'll do that. And then even from like the singing thing, as far as you saying, you know, well, you know, it's like you know your range, but you find your way to still expressively create the way you want to create. I find that really interesting. It's kind of like,
I've never even thought about that it was a long-term set of goals or anything. I never really thought about that. With the progression of the art side of it, I definitely think about business like that. You know, I've always kind of looked at the long-term, you know, the long-term side of the music business, but I've never really thought about the artistic long-term thing like that. So yeah, that's interesting to hear you say that.
Tell me about, as far as like, did songwriting come easy for you? Cause I mean, you know, that can, like you said, once again, or can, I guess in parallel of what you said, that can also be, you know, a long time job as well, if you're a hell of a songwriter. For writing your own songs, was that something that you, felt that you connected with really easy or really well, or were there any artists that kind of helped inspire you to write your own songs?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think songwriting is, I mean, like a lot of this stuff, it's not, some people, I mean, I guess are probably born with it, but it's kind of like a workout. You get better at it the more you do it. And I had a teacher that told me that, you know, the first 100 songs you write aren't going to be your best, you know, but you have to write them anyways. And so I would do a lot of that, just write songs and finish them and try to make them good. And then if I didn't like them in the end, and I still do that. I mean, when I'm cutting a record, you know, I usually cut too many songs because I know, and a lot of that doesn't have anything to do with the writing as much as it has to do with just the end result.
Right.
you don't always know exactly what you're doing. You don't always know if it's going to turn out the way you thought it was, you know, because we do a pretty good job of lying to ourselves and making ourselves think that we're like good at, we did something really good. In reality, it's like, it's not as good as you thought it was. And then you hear it. For me, a good test is showing a finished product to somebody else that I respect. And then if I'm nervous about it or if I'm embarrassed, then it probably wasn't that good of an idea to begin with. But if I can show it and they're listening to it and I'm confident about it, then it's, then I can tell if I was lying to myself the whole time or not.
Right. There's an interesting theory where some of the best songs or just forms of art, they didn't take that long to write. So some of the best songs were written in like 10, 20 minutes just because of the pure fire, inspiration, etc. You know, I've seen some of my friends write some of their best songs in like a matter of minutes working with them. Would you say have you seen certain cases for yourself as far as for some of your favorite songs that you've written where you're like, wow, that didn't take that long to write at all, but because you've been doing it for so long and maybe there's just a certain, you know, certain passion for something that you made it in a short period of time. Have you seen that in general?
Yeah. I mean, I think that I don't think there's a rule to that. Mm. I mean, I think that I couldn't tell you what my favorite song is I've written. I think, I think that when you write a lot of songs, which I guess I have written a lot of songs, I've got over probably 100 published at this point. I've probably written hundreds more, but I wouldn't be able to tell you which ones are my best or my favorite. And some of them took me years to write and some of them took me, you know, hours, some of them took me minutes. And I don't even remember which ones, you know, cause I don't think it really is. It's more about a destination than it is about the journey. You know, unlike a lot of other things, I would say it's the same with like making a record, you know, like when you're doing interviews and stuff, people are always like, I don't know how you made a record, you know? And it's like making a record is you're creating a piece of art, and writing a song, you're creating a piece of art that's going to be around for a long time, you know, maybe not forever, but longer than you're going to be around for. And
right.
How you made it really doesn't matter. Like, especially nowadays. I mean, there used to be some people that'd be like, oh, I don't use autotune, or I would never pitch shift a snare drum, or I would never, you know, play to a click track, or I would never quantize drums. And it's like, you're dealing with like people that are making thousands and thousands of songs, millions of songs coming out, you know, a year. And like, the pure artistry has nothing to do with how you made it. It has to do with whether you did it or not. And if people like it, you know, sure. Like if you're making a jazz record, it is about the playing, you know? So if you have somebody in there that's, you know, putting in auto-tuned singer, you know, cause you can't even tell anymore, you know, then that's a problem. But if you're going to do something that's like actually new and original, and I don't really care how somebody made something, you know, like I listen to the new Jack White record and it's like, it's crazy. And that guy used to be a purist, you know, people would be like, oh, this guy's only using tape machines and broken instruments and that's cool. And that's why he's authentic. And now it's like, I don't think like anybody has any qualms with what he's doing. Everybody's just like, well, this is insane. Like the production's crazy. Everything he's like, this guy sat in a room for 2 years and made some seriously weird music. And nobody's like, well, I'm sure he's still using a tape machine. Nobody cares anymore.
That's a really good point. It's funny. That's a really great point. Yeah. I had a conversation with my friend about that album, cause we're big Jack White fans, or seeing him we're seeing him at the YouTube, the YouTube theater in June. But I thought it was interesting. This, as far as for that song, Take Me Back, where he played drums last. Or it's just like completely.
You can do that when you have a lot of time.
Yeah.
And you have all the gear set up and you're like, okay, well, I'm just going to mess around in the studio with myself. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and that's the thing, is a lot of this stuff has to do with just time and money, you know?
Yeah.
And like a guy like Jack White isn't sitting around wondering, you know, how much he's spending on a studio in a day.
True.
He's just messing around trying to find the right sound and the right song. And that's great, you know?
Yeah.
And he's earned that. So,
true, true. I just thought it was funny from a creative basis. He said, like, in an interview, he was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure that was a bad idea.
Yeah, it is. It's a totally horrible idea. It's a horrible idea. But it's also like, if it comes out cool. I mean, I do stupid stuff in the studio all the time. You know, I'll be like, let's not use a click track on this. And then we do it. And I'm like, and then, you know, I get to mixing it. I was like, man, I really wish I used a click track on this, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but at the time you're feeling adventuresome and you just. And it's like, it doesn't really matter in the long run, you know, because it's all about the vibe that you're getting
right
when you got people in a room, if that's how you do it. But if you're multi-tracking something by yourself and you decide to do the drums after it, you know, I mean, I've done that plenty of times, but I end up redoing everything on top of the drums again, you know?
Oh, wow.
I mean, I've multi-tracked entire albums by myself before too.
Yeah.
Just as an exercise. Yeah. And it's cool and it's fun, but it, you know, it's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And I just prefer getting a bunch of people in a room and just, that you like to play with and just playing the songs. And
yeah.
I think that's cool too, with or without a click track, you know, without that element, it's cool sometimes and depends on the song essentially, you know, but yeah. Tracking drums after you do a bunch of stuff is like, I mean, that's like, I mean, it's totally possible, especially mm-hmm. when you're a talent like Jack White, but I mean, he's an amazing drummer and amazing everything, mm-hmm. but it's also just like, just gives me like anxiety thinking about it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I was going to say too, I'm a big fan of, I definitely want to talk about your, you know, your new album here in a bit. I was going to say, I'm a big fan of your voice. I think your voice reminds me of, it's like for singing, it reminds me of, the singer from the War on Drugs.
Oh, kind
of
cool.
A little bit of that tone there, but I am a big
fan. Yeah. I've never really spent, I've heard like the, you know, the breakout cuts from his stuff. Mm-hmm. But I've never really like listened to an album, but I've always liked what I heard.
Okay.
It's yeah. It's a great band and he's a great artist. It's one guy, right?
No, there's, they got a, it's a, I mean, at least from when I watched one of their performances for their most current album, it's like, it's probably like six people or something.
Gotcha.
But
yeah, I've always liked it for sure.
I just yeah,
really. And I've actually heard that there's a cut on my last record that was like, it's like a country version of War on Drugs. And I was like,
oh wow.
Interesting.
Yeah. Their album, A Deeper Understanding. It's interesting. Cause I feel like some of their music, they kind of do like albums in like a decade style. So like mm-hmm. this new one is kind of 80s inspired. When the cool. last one was very 70s inspired, but their album, A Deeper Understanding, which they coincidentally won a Grammy for, that's like a classic album. Like,
I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I would recommend. I think you would like it a lot too.
Yeah, like I said, I like everything I've heard. I just have never like done a deep dive into it.
Yeah,
And he was, and the War on Drugs, the front guy was in a band with that other guy that plays banjo that I like too.
Hmm.
I can't think of what his name is right now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if his.
He's got long hair and I don't know. Never mind.
But yeah, sorry. Definitely. No worries. No, man, definitely.
He's got long hair and he plays guitar. You know what I'm talking about, right? With the long hair and the guitar.
I wish I could.
In the band, you know what I mean?
In the band, you know, people, music. So tell me about, you know, your album, you know, Great Big Motel Bed in the Sky, I know you were telling me as far as like how, you know, music is made, I feel like you approach it from a very, I mean, obviously an artistic sense, but just in a non-formal way, it's kind of however it comes out, it comes out. Was there a specific concept in mind or was it more of an after effect for this album?
Well, I've just been playing with these guys here in Nashville, and I've been producing some records, and it's weird coming to Nashville and making records here because like the level of like musicianship is just like so much higher than what I'm used to.
Mm.
And I would put together these sessions and I would just be so impressed with like how good people were just able to play these songs. Like first time through.
Wow.
And I'd be like, this sounds better than like my first 10 records. And we just played it the first time right now, you know? And, And it was like kind of a changing point in my life where I was like, I don't want to like control anything anymore. I just want to like bring in really great musicians and like not hold back on the writing and not dumb things down or anything. I just want to like bring in really great players and like sit in a room and figure out the tunes and then record them like at the same time and yeah. just see what happens, you know, because when you're playing with some really great players like that, they're not sitting there trying to find the right notes. They're sitting there trying to find out how to how to play off of each other and how to play off the vocals and what kind of, what kind of like emotions to evoke. Mm-hmm. They're hitting it at like a different level than I can even imagine this stuff sometimes, because they're devoted to their instruments.
Right.
A lot of these guys play in, 20 bands and they play 9 hours a day on their instrument and they're just so advanced. They're on a next level. And for me to come in and try to produce that sometimes, it's like, I kind of have to like take a larger look at it and be like, we're going to, don't play here. Do you play here? But you really let people express themselves when they're that great of players.
Yeah.
That's something I never really experienced until I got to Nashville.
Hmm. Wow. Yeah. That's incredibly relatable. I had a similar experience because I just released an album myself and I had a very similar experience kind of making sure that like the people that I chose just had an energy that would be that would work with other people, and people wanted to work on these songs because they liked them naturally, and I feel like you got a better result because of that, and kind of being very hands off and like being more of an arranger than like
exactly,
so that definitely
resonates. I'm more of like can I get you a coffee kind of producer.
I like that.
Would you like a glass of wine? Oh, I'm supposed to be cutting right now. Okay, I guess I'll sit down. I just like having really talented people around and just and working together and kind of relying on each other to do our own job, and then we talk about it. But it's not like I'm saying do this or that. It's like we're all, we all have suggestions and we all come to the logical conclusions on stuff together. And it's a very Nashville way to do things, and it's how things used to be done all the time, until people started multitracking. And I still enjoy multitracking. Right? And I like taking a full band and then, taking it home and mixing it, and I'll multi-track on top of it. I do a lot of percussion, and I do, I've got my MIDI controllers, and I'll add keys, and I'll, I've got a lot of other great, vocalists here in town that I work with, and
yeah,
stuff like that. So, I enjoy all aspects of recording, but it's really fun to just take a band, and then even if it doesn't end up sounding like that in the end, it's really fun just having a band cut it in the room, and then you can take things away too if you want,
Right, right. Were there any moments on the album, during like the recording process where there are just some really special moments sonically where you're like, oh, wow, like that turned out even better than I imagined in my brain?
When I started cutting this last record, I didn't really expect there to be a whole lot of guitar on the record. I thought it was going to be, I was kind of going for a really stripped down record because my last record had become so busy. And it had a lot of string band stuff on it. And it was like a big band. It was like a 6 or 7 piece band. And I was kind of trying to do something really stripped down, acoustic guitar, steel, piano, and drums and bass. And then I was taking the cuts home and I was just adding just tons of guitar myself after the fact. And that was like, I had kind of created the sound of the record after like 2 sessions. And I was like, I'm so sick of hearing myself play guitar. And so I had this guy, Adam Meister, he plays with just about everybody in town. And I was just like, hey, I saw him around town. And I was like, you want to come do this final session for the record? I think it was the 4th session. And he came in and we cut like 5 tunes that day.
Nice.
And and he ended up, every one of those songs ended up on the record, I think, except for one. Which ended up it was just a cover. We covered a Bob Dylan song. There was no intention of putting on that record, but it was really great having him around and because I had done all the guitar up until that point on the record, and then having a really, really great guitar player come in and play very much like what I would be playing, but doing it much faster and better than me. It was like, oh, this is like a nice sonic detail that I kind of wished I had brought in earlier, you know. But it wasn't like my, you know, idea. I don't know. That's why I think sometimes it's better just to go with more stuff, but then you can take it away if you don't like it.
Right, right. I was curious to ask you too about the album art, which I find really neat. How did you come across that?
Well, that was just a concept that me and my friend Coralie worked on together. Just wanted it to represent the actual title of the record, which is like kind of an inside joke I had with my late bassist Eric Soles, and he's a dear friend of mine, and he passed away in 2020. Oh. And we used to always joke about making records that had motel themes in them. Like, we were going to make a record called Late Checkout. And we were going to have just all these stupid jokes about, we had one record that we did together called Continental Breakfast of Champions. So we just thought we'd always come up with stupid stuff over driving around the country.
Yeah.
You know, tired, naming records we were never going to make.
Right.
And so it was kind of just an ode to him in a way. Great big motel bed in the sky.
It gets you thinking when you read the title of it. It's like, oh, wow, this is interesting. What's this about? You know?
Yeah.
So, and my condolences too for your friend. That's
thanks. Yeah. It happened like right before we kind of knew what COVID was, or that COVID had probably already been in the country for like 2 months.
Right.
I think it was like January of 2020. And so it was like people were talking about the dark web and we all thought they were crazy.
Right.
Yeah. But he was a pretty unhealthy dude to begin with. So I think there's the possibility, and they wouldn't even know, you know, at this point if it was that or not. So,
right.
You know, he died in his sleep. So it's possible. You know. It was COVID, but I don't really know.
Yeah. As far as, you know, you have this 10 song, you know, album that you tracked in about 3 days or so. I mean, how do you feel about the project in general? Is it everything you wanted it to be and more, or, you know?
Does it say 3 days?
Oh, that's the notes I have here. I don't know if it was longer or shorter.
No, I don't, honestly, I feel like it was 4 days, but if it says 3 days, then that's what I wanted the press to think. So
everything was one take.
Did it all in one take. It took me less time to record the album than it did to listen to it. What was the question? Sorry, I got hung up on the numbers. I'm a numbers guy.
Yeah.
Bottom line numbers guy, really.
No, that's good, especially in the music industry.
I'm totally joking.
We're all trying to find the chased
by the IRS. Like, I'm not sure people getting behind me. They're going to walk into my bedroom.
But as musicians, that's all we're trying to find are the numbers. So wait, how much is a stream? Yeah. but no, I was asking just, how do you feel about the project, you know, in totality? Did your vision kind of come out how you wanted it to be?
Well, you know, I think recording, it's weird because I think a lot of people have expectations about what things are going to be, and they get hung up on what they want things to sound like, and they get hung up on just like what's going to happen with the record and this and that. And I've never really, I just kind of want things to be done.
Yeah.
I just want to do something and then get on with the next thing. Some people are so obsessed with making things right or wrong or whatever they're obsessed with about making art. And I think that you look at, you can, it's pretty easy to sit back and look at your life, and you spend a lot of time worrying about things and not actually doing anything.
Analysis paralysis, if you will.
Yeah. And so I'm just glad it's done and I'm ready to do something else, you know? And I talked to my distributor today, and she said the opposite. She said, well, you know, you made this record and a lot of people think the work is over, but you're like about to be really, really busy. And I was like, I know that, you know, I get that. And she's like, and the work isn't done. And she's like, you're basically a one man team over there, even though I have a team, you know, I have people that are working the record, but mm-hmm. you know, I'm managing the whole process. So I have a lot of work left to do on it. You know, mm-hmm. it's a lot of sitting in front of a computer and filling out paperwork and this and that, and, you know, and new things are revealed all the time. So, I mean, it's definitely not done. And it's not over. And I'm glad it's, but I don't think anybody really knows what a record is until it's been out a year. Mm. Like if I listen to the record now, it's going to be like, it'll make me crazy, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
Be like, oh, I'm about to show this to people. I don't want anybody to hear that. I don't really know what a record sounds like until it's been out a few years and I listen to it again. And then I'm like, oh yeah, that's way cooler than I remember it being. Like, I remember hating that record, you know?
Yeah.
And I just made it and then I hated it and then I put it out and I like didn't ever want to hear it again. And then you listen to it and you're like, oh, that was actually a moment in time. And that's all a record is. It's a recording of a moment in time. Yeah. Who you are, what your art is like. And I think that's great, you know, and that it's so easy to sit around and obsess, especially nowadays when you can make everything perfect and nobody wants to hear a perfect record. You know, Jeff Tweedy from Wilco, who's, you know, somebody I've been following for my entire career, you know, he's been around doing it forever. And he used to sit around and multi-track those first records and they would do band stuff and they would sit there, Jay Bennett, and they would just work on overdubs and they had Pro Tools and they had all sorts of stuff that they were, it was still new, you know, and they were like, this is amazing. We can make this sound like a Beatles record or whatever, you know, and we can add anything to this we want. And then he's like, but not anymore. You know, now I just have a band and we all sit in a room and play the songs. And that's all I want music to be because it's the only thing that's healthy for me. You know, you know, it's not good for your mental health to sit and obsess over something. And the fact is like, if you think that what you're doing is that important, that it's going to like, you know, like look around. I mean, everybody's put, there's tons of music being created. And if you think that like what you're doing is some level of genius that's worth like destroying your life or your health or whatever over, it's like, I don't know. I just don't see it at this point in my life. I think it's better to just be honest and give people a recording, a place and time.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I love that. So, Nathan Kalish, this is, this is a really great conversation, man. I wanted to thank you for speaking with me and I'm looking forward to when the album comes out. Cause I listened to almost all of it and definitely was enjoying it.
It gets pretty lame at about 7, doesn't it? Gotta turn off track 7.
No, man, it gets better. but thanks for being on the show, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Well, there you have it, folks. This is Jarrell Powell here on the 440 Guitar Podcast. We will jam again soon and have a good day.